but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Coming up later in the show, we'll get a visit from Oregon's Gold Glove shortstop, Paige Sinicki, having her best season at the plate. Big Derek Jeter fan. Oregon softball with a dramatic walk-off win to run away with victory over Stanford and advancing, and they get the blessing of having Texas A&M, the number one seed. They were going to have to go on the road, play at Texas A&M. They will no longer have to do that. They'll get to host. Lot break in Oregon's way. How about Oregon State? Well, mediation continuing or starting today. First day of mediation with the Pac-12 and the Mountain West Conference. I'm going to tell you everything I know about this. I talked to a source who said today was just about starting the mediation. That, you know, there's no smoke coming from black smoke, white smoke coming from the Vatican yet. But I wanted to get a guest on who has mediated a number of different things. Alan Thayer, Innovative Law Group, right there in Eugene, specializes in this kind of stuff. He knows mediation. He joined us, what was it, last week, I think, to talk a little bit about the Pac-12 Mountain West. Well, I want to ask him kind of what we should all expect here from the first day or two or however long this mediation goes. So Alan Thayer joining us now. Thanks for making time.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
You bet. You bet. All right, so give us an idea. Like, first day of mediation, big case. You got a bunch of chair one, chair two lawyers in a room. A lot of billable hours. I can't even imagine what this is going to cost. But you got the Mountain West and the Pac-12 starting their mediation. Sounds like it's either a federal judge or a retired federal judge who will be the mediator. Alan, set the stage for this thing. What is going on right now with this?
Well, I know you have your sources. One of the things that would be interesting to find out is who are in the rooms. Who's in the room for the Pac-12? Who's in the room for the Mountain West? So these mediations, they don't involve just the lawyers. They are, each party is required to have their decision makers in the room so an agreement can be reached. So it would be interesting. Who's there for the Pac-12? I mean, we can make some guesses. Someone from Oregon State, someone from Washington State. Who's there for the Mountain West? If UNLV is in the room with the Mountain West, well, that tells us something about how the mediation may go and what may be involved. Is UNLV on the phone with people in one room or the other? Which room? Or maybe it's both. Maybe they're talking to both rooms. But finding out exactly who are the decision makers, that would be, I as a lawyer, that would be interesting for me to know, so as to maybe start reading the tea leaves before the white smoke or black smoke comes from the chimney.
And with a federal judge or a retired federal judge, can you help explain why that's important? If there's an antitrust suit that is one of the decisions that's in front of the group to mediate, why is it important to have somebody with a federal judicial background in that room?
I think to a large degree it's the gravitas of the mediator. They can say, I've heard these cases, I've listened to these cases, I've ruled on these cases, and let me tell you about some weak points from your side. And he says that to each side. As we talked about last time, is you're not going to reach a negotiated settlement unless you equalize the expectations of the parties. And here in mediation, it means getting both sides to think about their case and get them to move on the dollars or whatever other terms are involved on what they're willing to accept. But you asked the question, what happens the first day? So yes. to a large degree, well, when even before today, every mediation I've been involved with, the mediator, whether it's a judge or a third-party non-judge mediator, they require some advance work by the parties. The parties have to provide information. And I went back and looked at several of my mediations in anticipation of this call. And usually there's 5 points the mediator wants the parties to provide information on. And it's usually in the form of a written memorandum to the mediator. It's a confidential memorandum, so it's not shown to the other parties, but it's a communication between each party and the mediator. And the first one is, what are the key issues in the case? And then what is each party's strongest and weakest point? And by that, I mean, the Pac-12 will be asked, what are the Pac-12's strongest and weakest points? And they will also ask the Pac-12 for its perception of what the Mountain West's strongest and weakest points are. And then the Mountain West will be asked to do the same thing. Then the mediator is going to want to ask, what settlement negotiations have there been up to this point? And in every case, by the time you get to mediation, you've had at least some preliminary settlement discussions. And then each party is asked what would constitute a fair settlement. And then the fifth question is, what are obstacles to settlement? And there each party is, okay, here are the problems. I mean, in this instance, the Pac-12 might say that Commissioner Navarro grossly overplayed her hand when it came to this scheduling agreement. And as a result, there's a lot of bad faith and bad blood between the parties. I don't know if that's a thing, but that's an example of the type of obstacle that could be disclosed in a confidential memorandum.
We're talking to Alan Thayer, who is an attorney, Innovative Law Group in Eugene, Oregon. Let me ask you this. As you sorted through strongest and weakest points, I have talked with attorneys on both sides, and I think I have a fair, assessment of where they might start. And I think the Pac-12 will simply say, hey, the Mountain West Conference put the Pac-12 in a really bad position. They had, they were placed in a position where they had to sign a document. They expressed at the time that they believed it was not enforceable from an antitrust standpoint, but they had no other choice because if they wanted to have a 2024 football season, they had to play ball with the Mountain West and sign this agreement that included these poaching penalties. The Mountain West, conversely, is going to say, hey, you signed the document. Come on. What are we talking about? You had eyes wide open. You negotiated in good faith. From an antitrust standpoint, is it as simple as the federal judge being able to look at the legality and say, hey, if you went into a courtroom, the Pac-12 might have a pretty strong case. Or if you went into the courtroom, the Mountain West might have a pretty strong case. Will the mediator offer some of that steering?
Oh, absolutely. You know, to the Pac-12, they might say, I know you think you have a pretty good case, but things can always go off the rails. There's the unknown, the uncertainty. For the Mountain West, I don't really know what the Mountain West position is going to be going into here, because I really do believe they have a very, very weak case.
Yeah.
If I was the Mountain West, I would be trying to extract some sort of concession in exchange for money. And by money the Pac-12 doesn't have to pay. under the contract. I don't really understand what the Mountain West position might be. Have you been told anything by your contacts that would say why they think you signed it strategy will actually work?
Yeah, in reading the briefs too that were filed, you know, in response to the lawsuit, they really didn't raise an argument against it. And I had several other, lawyers look at it, and they said, gosh, the Pac-12's attorneys, and you know that firm that the Pac-12 has hired is a pretty highly compensated, dream team-like law firm. They feel like they've got a strong case. They're whispering that they feel like they have a strong case. Feels to me like some of this just may come down to them kind of trying to use maybe their leverage in the antitrust suit to go out and help, you know, negotiate down some of the settlement fees for the exit fees for the departing schools. How can these things, the integration of these lawsuits, affect one another, Alan? As you look at it, you know, you've got Boise State, Colorado State, Utah State suing the Mountain West. You have the Pac-12 suing the Mountain West. How do they mediate all of these things together, or how do they deal with one issue and not another while they're talking?
Well, in many ways, it's kind of just one big package. What if anything, is paid for poaching fees? What if anything is paid for exit fees? I think they're all wrapped together in a bow, so I don't see that being a big problem.
I'm also
Go ahead. Here's what I do see as a problem, though.
Yeah.
And that is Navarro has promised money from these payments, which the Mountain West may or may not receive, to UNLV and Air Force Academy to get them to stay. And so when you talk about obstacles to settlement, I think Navarro and the Mountain West, and Navarro, of course, is the commissioner of the Mountain West.
Yeah, Gloria Navarez, the commissioner,
Navarez, excuse me.
Yeah.
The Mountain West is in a terrible bind there. So I don't know exactly what they do.
I think in the end, I think their pitch, and tell me if this is crazy, because I have heard the whisper going into mediation that the Mountain West pitch to the Pac-12 might be, hey, let's drop everything and let's come up with some kind of merger or some way these two conferences can work together. But I just at this point don't see the Pac-12 interested in that because, you know, the five schools that are departing the Mountain West don't want anything to do with the Mountain West.
Yeah, I don't see that at all. Plus, the Pac-12 is really trying to position itself as something that is in between the group of five schools and the Power Four schools, and a merger, which I think the Mountain West has been clear from the very beginning. You look at the original scheduling agreement, and there was a provision in there about exploring merger. I don't think it's going to happen. And if that is the Mountain West's true expectation, I doubt if they will mediate for very long.
Yeah, you know, and that's the other thing I'm wondering. When you think you've got a positive mediation, are you burning the midnight oil? Are you scheduling additional days? What are some positive signs we should look for? You know, we're not going to get smoke from the Vatican, but if I'm told, hey, they've scheduled two more days of mediation, what would you be looking for signs this is going in a positive way?
Yeah, I mean, there's three outcomes to today's session. Number one is highly unlikely. They reach a settlement today. Well, that could happen if there's been a lot of advance work between now and then, but no one has reported, and certainly you have not reported, that has happened. Number two is they agree to continue to talk. That is without a doubt a good sign, at least in terms of settlement. Mm-hmm. Or they say, well, we're just too far apart. Let's agree to disagree. and ask the judge to rule on the motion to dismiss that was filed by the Mountain West. That will likely be resolved in the Pac-12's favor. And then if they mediate again after that, which they certainly can do, the expectations of the gap between the parties presumably will be narrowed in their expectations because the court has ruled on the antitrust issues.
Alan Thayer, I appreciate you sharing your expertise. When we get a settlement, I'd love to have you back on to talk about it.
Well, I look forward to that.
Good stuff. There he is from the Innovative Law Group in Eugene, Alan Thayer. We've been talking a lot about Oregon and Oregon State, and we'll continue the conversation about sports in the state of Oregon coming up in the next segment. I got a little intel on the Blazers sale that's interesting. We can talk about that, plus our big splash is still ahead. I want to take a couple phone calls here, though, real quick. Cam and Eugene listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Cam, we've been talking about the Ducks and a possible breakthrough, and what's on your mind?
I still think it would be magical if it happened in the next couple of years, but things are getting kind of late in that regard.
Yeah.
Fans like me can, you know, we're not just looking at the here and now. Our vision kind of begins with, like, Joey Harrington, and then you look forward decades, and you see, like, one of the last callers said, you know, he's been waiting on it for 20 years. So for us, it's always going to be magical. But there are starting to be more and more young fans. We have teenagers now that have really only known life after Chip Kelly or maybe really late Bilotti. And there's still a window there because when you're that young, sports are magical, right? It's still important. It's still big. It's still. But if we get too much farther down the road, we're going to get to a place where, you know, it's we've always been great, and this year is just the year we won the title. Even if it's the first. And that'll take some of the shine off of it, but I think there's still a little time left.
I appreciate that, Cam and Eugene. How about Jerry in Clackamas? Jerry, welcome.
Thanks. Hey, John. I when he called in about that anti-Dana Altman stuff, I thought, come on. I'm a Beaver fan, okay? But, you know, Dana Altman dealing with what he's been dealt with has been doing a great job, so that's right off the bat. Secondly, I'm involved in some, you know, fundraising stuff, and I have been involved in customer service and raising money to help send kids to go to a camp that I went to when I was a kid outside of Salem. And I will say this, and our mentors taught us this as well, if you discredit or do not cherish your donors and your volunteers, you are just double dumb. You can never go back and ask for more. I mean, you can. And of course, everybody wants to have the giant benefactor people. That's obviously a huge thing, too. You better be thanking them. They are not necessarily asking for you to do so necessarily. But if you don't, it's just flat stupid. That's my rant.
Appreciate you. Yeah, look, if you've got the access and you've got the donor, you know, you know you need to go pedal to the metal. That's what Oregon has done in this era. Now, Rob Mullins, the athletic director at Oregon, is well aware that, you know, if they've got the resources and they've got the coaching and they've got Phil Knight right now as a willing and able donor, and you don't jump through that window of opportunity, ultimately people are going to look back at the AD and go, okay, wait a minute, what happened here? Why didn't you go for it? Why didn't it work? Our big splash is coming up. Stick around.